Well, it is that time of year in Northern Hemisphere when spring has sprung and people are returning to their gardens. Except if you lived on the West Coast, you've had 2 months head start. The daffodils and the tulips, the chartreuse and green of the buds on the maples and the oaks, the smell of that beauty returns. The beauty that God has gifted us with again and again and again, that all too often we take for granted. It is that tending of the earth, that respect and desire to protect and to steward well, that was the inspiration behind the one indeed who started Earth Day back in 1969. As a matter of fact, John McConnell attended the meeting of UNESCO in California and suggested that there should be a holiday. And he spoke to them about the motivation for that as a person who had observed the landing on the moon and the pictures of the Earth from space. Someone who was deeply immersed in his own faith. He belonged to the Pentecostal church, but had a particular experience of care for the earth and took the words of Genesis seriously, that God has created this and entrusted it to human care and asked that we steward it well. And the next year, 1970, Earth Day was instituted, and we celebrate the 40th anniversary of it this coming Thursday. It is the confluence, in a sense, of faith and commitment of those of goodwill and who have raised their consciousness to recognize that we cannot continue the way that we have. It is not a desire to just go back to the time of Eden, as it were. Some of you might remember around the same time when John McConnell was instituting or inviting the world to embrace this holiday for the earth, there was a band at the time, rock and roll, more sultry tones, I guess, Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young. Any of you remember? If you admit it, you're dating yourself. But they had a song and a line. It was, "Let's go back to the garden." Do you remember that? It was an invitation to kind of recapture that innocence, as it were. Kind of like Thoreau, who could not take in the 1840s the congestion in Concord, Massachusetts, and went to a cabin on Walden Pond and there wrote and reflected, tried to recreate that Edenic experience. It is not so much reaching back for that as it is taking stock of where we are now today and how we're called to steward forth. And it is faith communities and others who are joining together to lead this and to encourage rather than blame. In January, I was invited to attend a function. It was a celebration of the filmmakers of the Ottawa area. And they were celebrating the awards that some of their members received, one of which was a fellow by the name of David Shenushenko. Some of you may have heard of him. He's a local environmentalist and is part of the Living Lightly Project. And he won an award for his documentary called Be the Change in California. And the local chapter was celebrating his accomplishment. I had an extended conversation with David, rather personable person, lives in Old Ottawa South, and was talking about the motivation behind the making of this documentary. He did not go further than 100 kilometers around Ottawa and went and interviewed and spoke with people who are in their own way trying to make a difference, trying to steward the earth, to care for this world in which we live and to live lightly on the earth. One of the stories that he chronicles in his documentary is a woman by the name of Randy Cherry is her name. Some of you may have heard of Randy. She is a real activist, and before it was in vogue was composting almost to a fault. Her nieces call her their crazy aunt. But now she used to be disturbed by that, but now she finds it as a very good moniker. And she has encouraged people to not make garden spaces in the city. This is something that they had to do. Do you remember during the Second World War in England when so much of the property and the fields were destroyed that they made little gardens all around the streets. And so she said, we shouldn't have to wait for that kind of thing. There's also the story of Lori Gazzala, who lives in Manotick. They live and she is an activist for the waterfront. She wrote and continues to write local articles in her newspaper, but she is the one to whom it's credited, I'm told, for getting this whole reusable shopping bag movement going. She wrote about plastic bags. Over 7 million per week in the Ottawa area used to be used. Said, this is unacceptable. And invited people to reflect on their use of plastic and the movement to reuse reusable bags in a sense became popular. Here's a shameless plug. We sell them here at our church, our own Parkdale reusable bag. Is that good, Barbara? I think there'll be somebody out there if you want to get yours. So anyway, that's all the commercial about that. There's also included an excerpt from Joanne Robertson. She and her husband, on the 35th anniversary of their marriage, they decided that they were going to do a project. For 1 year, they were going to commit to not put any garbage out. They were going to recycle, reuse, find imaginative ways, indeed, to compost and so forth. And after the year, they had only one quarter of a garbage bag. And then they decided, well, let's do it another year. And they did this for 3 successive years, and it took them 3 years to fill up one garbage bag. But he chronicles a number of stories. And I invite you to check it out, because it is all about the local Ottawa area. But there you have someone and others who are imagining ways to live lightly, but we are also finding motivation from the communities of faith. Our brothers and sisters in the Jewish faith have just celebrated Passover. And Rabbi Jeff Solter talks about ways in which he sees the correspondence between some movements within the Passover celebration and earth care within Judaism. One of the practices in preparing for Passover is to rid the Jewish home of chametz. Chametz is all that rye, barley, and so forth that has been mixed with water that has fermented for more than 18 minutes. That is considered that which needs to be disbanded or put out of the home for the duration and the celebration of Passover. But chametz is seen as not only the expanding of the yeast and so forth, but theologically, he goes on to say that it also refers to the excess in one's life. Excesses. And today, excesses could be seen in terms of carbon dioxide pollution or carbon emissions. Excess in terms of overconsumption. And sees a theological link between the celebration of Passover and earth care. In the Muslim faith as well, the provision for the earth and respecting and caring for it on behalf of Allah is very strong. That there's a moral responsibility of those who consider themselves righteous to care for the earth. Even my own interest and desire to discover more and to live more lightly, as it were, not that I'm great at that, started way back when I was young, when I encountered an interfaith dialogue in Montreal, those, and I've shared this before, those who belong to the Jainist faith. The Jainists are as an offshoot of Buddhism that has a profound respect for all living things. And talking with this Jainist monk began to understand something about the deep regard that we need to have for the earth. And it was that encounter that threw me back into my own Christian tradition to discover what is it that we have to say about that. And I went to the first chapter of Genesis and second chapter, and we began to see something that has been misrepresented for so long. For so long, and I think the church needs to take responsibility, some responsibility for this, although there has always been a remnant challenging that dominant view. But for too long, we have interpreted that invitation, that command to have dominion over the world or to rule over the earth and all of these things as an exploitative one. One in which we are masters to do and manipulate as we will. But when you understand that theologically, that invitation to rule is rule in the order of God. In other words, rule with the stewarding servant care that God offers to the world. We use the wrong model. We're mentored by the wrong ideal. And so it is that there is born a huge eco-justice and eco-Christian movement that invites us to look seriously at how we steward the very gospel. And I think how you may ask ourselves, how does this correspond with our reading today, in particular from John? And before showing those links, I would like us to consider for a moment how much both the creation, resurrection, and gospel themes are interwoven. When you look at the teaching and the life of Jesus, think about how it is fundamentally based on examples and metaphors of creation. Can you think of some? Think back of his very birth. It was heralded by what? The star. The animal on which his mother rode to Bethlehem was a donkey. The place in which he was born was filled with animals. And in his teaching and his life, he talked about sowing and harvesting and weeding. The story of the fig tree and the gardener who tended it and spoke on behalf of this particular faulting tree. He said to Peter, on this what? On this rock I will build my church. He said in Matthew 6 about worrying and being anxious, consider the birds of the air. He talked about trees. And so, interwoven in the gospel and the teaching and the life of Jesus, we find creation themes are mixed in. It is part and parcel of our gospel. It was Jesus who, for his first sign or miracle in John, turned water into... Don't get carried away with that one. And so when we come then to this gospel reading today from John, we also see the importance of creation themes, seminally interwoven in the gospel resurrection appearance. But Jesus comes, and when he comes, he finds the disciples doing what? Fishing. Fishing in the sea. Remember we read in the Psalm reading, there is the sea, vast and spacious, teeming with creatures beyond number, living things both large and small. They have not caught anything. Jesus presses with them an invitation to them, correction of their direction, as it were, enables them to catch something and to share a common meal together, to sit and eat using fire. And then Jesus turns to Simon Peter, the rock, and says to him, do you love me? Three times. And what does he say in response after Peter assures him, yes, I love you? What does he say? Feed my sheep, tend my lambs, care for them. Here's an interesting connection. I didn't know until I started researching a little bit. Unlike cows, sheep eat the roots of the plants as well. In other words, they are discontinuing the very source of their food. For me, it brought new theological significance to a passage in Isaiah that says, all we like sheep have gone astray, each to his own way. The psalmist cries out, I am like a sheep, a lost sheep, the parable of the lost sheep. And here I find a profound correspondence with our theme today. For we, in some ways, like the sheep, are unwittingly or intentionally destroying the very source of our livelihood by the way we treat the earth. We are misguided to believe that it is eternally regenerative if we abuse it any way we want. And so here is an invitation to sync up our faith, our care of the earth, and our care for those who suffer because, especially those who suffer because of the degradation. We think, for instance, of the very sea from which the disciples caught those fish. We know that in our world, the oceans contain 97% of all living matter on the earth. And in fact, it takes up more than about 3/4 of the earth's surface. Beneath the ocean and the seas, there are mountains higher than Mount Everest, canyons and ravines deeper, valleys deeper than the Grand Canyon. It is majestic. There is only a small fraction of the living matter of the oceans that have been discovered. There's a project afoot now to discover 5,000 more species of fish in over the next 20 years. There is so much life and abundance, but the oceans are being destroyed. And many of our seas are being overfished. And that is particularly challenging for those in the world from coastlands, many in the 2/3 world, who depend on fish for their livelihood. It comprises about 1/5 of their protein intake. And many of those smaller fishing operations are no longer because the fish are not there. The precariousness of poverty and starvation is brought even worse because of how we have threatened the seas. So here we find the resurrection appearances that Jesus encounters his disciples, calls them into a life of discipleship to follow me. Follow me and sends them to feed the sheep. Now, obviously, yes, in a spiritual way, but Jesus has never been one as a good Jew to separate the physical and the spiritual. Jesus also took items of creation, the loaves and the fishes, and multiply them to do what? Feed the multitude. So it's never about allegorizing or making only metaphor of this spiritual invitation to feed. It is also about tending all the processes that go to feeding the world, especially the most vulnerable. Our creation gift from God, the resurrection experience of new life, and the challenge to the things that would be death-creating, as well as the essence of the gospel, summons us to be courageous in our engagement of this world in which we live, and the ramifications of destroying it, especially on the most vulnerable of our world. Let inspiration be drawn from music, from your faith traditions, from those of goodwill and foresight and vision who are seeking not to make people feel guilty, so to speak, but to encourage and draw them into a life of living lightly on the world and on this earth. There's the Jesuit poet, Gerald Manley Hopkins. Many of you are familiar with a part of that poem about God's grandeur. Says the world is charged with the grandeur of God. It will flame out like shining from shook foil. Generations have trod. All is smeared with trade, bleared, smeared with toil, and wears man's smudge and shares man's smell. The soil is bare now, and for all this nature is never spent. There lives the darest freshness deep down things. Because the Holy Ghost over the bent world broods with warm breath and with bright wings. So yes, God's regenerative commitment is to the world. The vision at the end of human history is still, behold, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. There is a commitment to stay with the earth, to stay with us. But we also are charged and called to play our part, to recognize and respect this world that is charged with the grandeur of God. Let me end with this little parable. It comes from a journalist who went to visit Haiti before the recent catastrophe and was visiting at a little mission hospital. And at that hospital in Haiti, it served over 10,000 people. It had only 2 doctors. It had 2 nurses and electricity from a nearby factory for only 4 hours a day. And the journalist asked them, how do you make it? How do you do it? How do you keep going? This is such desperate. You can't hope to serve all these people. There's no way. What keeps you going? And the doctor responded with this fable. A man was riding through the jungle on his donkey when suddenly the donkey stopped And there was a little bird lying on its back in the middle of the path with its legs straight up in the air. "What do you think you're doing?" asked the donkey. The little bird replied, "I'm holding up the sky." The donkey hee-hawed and hee-hawed and hee-hawed. And then the bird said, "You can't do that." The little bird thought and said, "I start where I am and I do what I can." Jesus calls us to follow. To follow in the care of the world and the earth, to follow in the care of the poor, to follow in the sharing of the good news of the gospel, to follow. We can't take it all on, but like the little bird, we start where we are and we do what we can. Thanks be to God. Amen.